get ready to be inspired by the great things happening in rural education. The Rural Scoop will bring you new ideas and innovative solutions. We'll dive into education issues and we'll highlight what's working in your rural communities. You'll hear from a variety of educators, administrators, professionals, and others who will provide relevant and engaging content in each episode. And now, serving up the scoop, here's your host, Dr. Melissa Sadorf.
Thank you, Rural Scoop listeners, for tuning in for part of a series of interviews that gives us a chance to know our educators from around the country that are doing amazing things in their classrooms. I'm excited to have an opportunity not only to talk to some fine educators, but also to introduce my co-host for this series, Ty White. Ty is the 21-22 ARSA Teacher of the Year and has also been awarded the National Teacher of the Year for the National Rural Education Association, and he is the Teacher of the Year for the Arizona Educational Foundation. Ty, can you introduce yourself?
So welcome, everybody. I teach chemistry at Wilcox High School, and I guess I'm going to use that to tell a bit more about myself, because Wilcox is this charming little community out here in Southeast Arizona, about an hour and a half east of Tucson. And it's a beautiful place to live. It's a beautiful place to teach. And we get to do some ranching on the side. So I'm actually going to move on, because I'm excited to introduce all of our listeners today to Amber Nichols. Amber Nichols is this year's West Virginia State Teacher of the Year, meaning across every paradigm of the teaching profession. And she's got some great stories that I want you guys to hear about and learn about.
So Amber, why don't you take a little bit of time and introduce the listeners to who you are and what you've been doing in education during the last however many years you've been a teacher. We'd love to know more about where you're coming from and what you do.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Amber Nichols. I'm the 2023 West Virginia Teacher of the Year, a very proud honor because there is no one who loves West Virginia more than I do. I've been in the classroom for 21 years. I've taught both kindergarten and special education. I have a master's degree from West Virginia University. And interestingly enough, I have a bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism. So kind of a strange story of how I started in education, but it works. Doing really well. I absolutely love being in the classroom. I pride myself on creating a classroom environment in which all kids feel safe, loved, and appreciated. My mantra is we're here for the kids and we have each other. And I really strive to build positive relationships, both with the adults and the children within the school. I am a mom to three beautiful children. One is in college, one's in high school, and one is in elementary school. So I'm a busy woman. I really love to advocate for students with disabilities. My middle daughter has severe epilepsy. So that is a cause that I hold dear to my heart. And I kind of mix that with my special education background. And I love to write. I'm publishing a book as we speak, and I hope to start my doctorate in August. So lots of cool things going on here in West Virginia.
That's fantastic. Tell me a little bit more about your book.
So I have already written three children's books, and now I'm working on a book that kind of encourages parents who are going through hard times. You know, my daughter has had severe epilepsy for about 9 years now, 200 seizures a day. You know, we've lost her, you know, cognition, you know, seen a lot of regression in who she was and who she started out in life. And it's been a difficult journey, but I really feel like through that journey, we found purpose in our pain. And I really want to encourage other families who may be going through the same thing to really look for the bright spots and look for the light in the darkness of their journey. So that's kind of the premise of the book. And I hope to get it out pretty soon.
Wonderful.
So if you started with the degree in journalism, I'd like to know how you got into being an educator. What was that journey like, and what brought you here?
So it's so cool that I'm speaking with two Arizona educators, because that's where it all began. So I've always known I wanted to work with children. I really just thought that was going to be in a broadcasting arena. I wanted to do children's broadcasting and programming. PBS was like that ultimate goal for me. So I majored in mass communications broadcasting, completed that degree. I married my high school sweetheart, who was a graduate of the Naval Academy and a Marine Corps officer. And our first duty station was Yuma, Arizona. And so I actually got hired in a very small station there. I lasted about 16 days and I realized that I could teach in Arizona with a 4-year degree. And my first day of teaching kindergarten, the place that I know that I was truly meant to be, was on September 11th, 2001. So it's a really unique story. My first day of stepping foot into the classroom, and the principal called all the military spouses to the office. And she said, you know, if you need to leave to go arrange the affairs of your home, you know, I'll cover your class. And there is a ranking with military wives. No one likes to talk about it, but the lieutenant colonel's wife kind of took over and she said, no, we're here for the kids and we have each other. And it was the ultimate mic drop. And the seven of us marched right back into our classrooms and we loved on kiddos and we served our community in the most courageous way. And it really just shaped, you know, what I didn't know that I wanted to be a teacher, but on that day I realized that I was a teacher and it was just what I was meant to do. So my first day of teaching was September 11, 2001 in Yuma, Arizona.
Wow.
That is a wild story. That's powerful.
It is a wild story. It is very powerful. And it's such a great message, right? We're here for the kids and we have each other. It's a simple mantra, but I think if we all use that to our fullest potential, you know, success is sure to follow.
So Amber, I understand that you have a rural school that you are teaching in. Can you talk a little bit more about why rural? Why did you choose to continue to be in a rural setting after you started in Yuma, Arizona, which is also rural?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. You know, I am probably the most proud West Virginian that you will ever meet. I love the people here. I love the beauty that surrounds us here. I wanted my own children to experience the West Virginia that I did. But at the same time, I wanted them to make West Virginia a place that they could be proud to pass down to their children. You know, over 65% of West Virginia is defined as rural. So I knew that being in West Virginia, I would be in a rural setting. And so there's really nowhere else that I would rather be than West Virginia. And that just means rural for us.
So can you tell us a little bit about where you're teaching now? Tell us about your school and what that looks like.
Yeah. Sure. So I teach at a green school, which is a really cool opportunity. We were the first green school here in West Virginia. It's a wonderful opportunity for our kids to really explore, you know, sustainability. And, you know, we garden and kindergartners are in charge of growing kale. We talk about, you know, recycling and all of the things that students need to know and reducing our carbon footprint. And it's just a really unique experience to get to be kind of in a town, and we have trail cams and we are constantly outside. You know, I would say 80 to 90% of our day is spent outside, which is a really, really cool way to teach.
That sounds like a pretty neat way to be teaching science at the elementary level too.
It's immersive, right? Like we're all in it all day long. It's awesome. It's amazing. It's really great. It's a great, I will stay in that school for as long as I can.
Well, so I mean, I was going to follow up with that. Like, how long have you been at that school? You started at Yuma. have you jumped around the country or was it straight back to West Virginia?
Yeah, we jumped around a little bit. I taught in Arizona and then I taught in Pennsylvania for a little while. And then we came back and we moved around a bit in West Virginia, but we settled down in Morgantown, West Virginia. So I've been at Eastwood since we opened and that was in 2013. So we just celebrated our 10th year.
That's Amber, awesome. To have that kind of programming that you're talking about where you are immersed in the community, you really have to know your assets. How have you guys been able in the last 10 years to do some of that community asset mapping?
It is vital. And like you said, it's what we have to do in a rural setting, correct? You know, I think that we are fortunate in West Virginia to have those close community ties, you know, and we rely heavily on those education partners. I mean, we have the June Harless Center, we have the West Virginia Public Education Collaborative, Education Alliance. I mean, we know who our partners and allies are in education, and we rely heavily on them. I think that part of that is with the administration. And I'm blessed to work for a strong both superintendent and principal that know that we need those community partners, and they rely heavily on them.
So teaching in a rural setting is not for the faint of heart. There are some opportunities and some unique challenges that it presents. Sure. As a rural teacher, what are some of the things that you've had to grapple with?
I think that the single greatest challenge facing rural teachers right now, and it's facing all teachers, but maybe differently for us, is the lack of access to mental health services. Without a doubt, it's the greatest challenge for all teachers. You know, the American Journal of Preventative Medicine just put out a study, which I thought was just groundbreaking in my mind, that 65% of non-metropolitan counties don't have a single psychiatrist, let alone a psychiatrist in schools or a specialized child psychologist. So we've always struggled for adequate access for healthcare in rural America, but we are absolutely failing our kids in the area of mental health. You know, we have post-COVID, the opioid crisis here in West Virginia is running rampant, the poor mental health of the adults in these children's lives. You know, all these issues are compounding at rapid rates, and we're on the verge of a collapse of mental health. I serve on our school's behavior intervention and crisis teams, and we have been in so many dire situations in which our only option was to call 911, and they would stabilize a student, send them home, and put them on a wait list for mental health services, sometimes up to 6 months. You know, we really have to get policymakers involved to address the mental health challenges. We need trained professionals. We need mental health crisis planning. We need resources. You know, there are a lot of things that we need. I think it's a pretty simple equation. Our students can't learn when they're not mentally well. And so if we put that at the forefront and really work at that, it's an upside down approach sometimes in education. But we're really seeing that. And I think our rural areas are being hit the hardest.
You know, I don't think it's limited just to the mental health either. Not that I'm trying to change your answer.
Sure.
That was
no, beautiful. Yeah, sure.
But the Daily Yonder just published something a little bit ago about hospitals in rural community hospitals operating in the red. Something sure. Like 20% of them getting ready to file for bankruptcy. Just healthcare across the board, I think, in rural communities.
For sure. And we've always struggled, I feel like, with access to healthcare. And maybe it is post-COVID that's bringing a light to all of these mental health issues. You know, but when we're looking at students at the age of 5 who cannot regulate their emotions, you know, I've had to teach students how to play. You know, in 21 years of education, I have never had to purposefully instruct the act of play, something so natural. You know, the basis for all of education is play. And I've had to physically instruct, you know, that process. It's a wild place to be in, for sure.
On a lighter note.
Sorry about that.
No. That's an important message I think people need to understand. But to pick it up a little bit, right, just to lighten the load, it's a common thread and in every interview we've done, like rural teachers, period, wear a lot of hats. But it seems like rural teachers especially carry extra loads beyond the typical classroom. What are some of the extra things you do in your school community besides the teaching?
I am in after school. I coordinate the school portion of our weekend snack packs. I'm on our school's behavior curriculum team. I'm a team leader. I run our school's Care Bear program, which is our culture and climate resource team. I am a cooperating teacher for student teachers at West Virginia University. I'm the site coordinator for our summer program. I'm the liaison for our career and technical center. I am the hiring committee chair, and I teach kindergarten every single day to 22 of the most amazing 5 and 6 year olds you can meet. And that's just in school.
There's a lot to unpack there, but I'm sorry. You said something that's been sitting in my mind a lot lately. Tell me again, you do what with West Virginia University with the teachers?
I am a cooperating teacher. I was actually just awarded the Cooperating Teacher of the Year for 2022, which is really great.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. I really, really love working with our pre-service teachers. I love getting them excited about entering the best profession in the world and really laying that groundwork for helping to get them hired and to help them feel successful in starting their education journey. So it's definitely something I'm super passionate about. If I ever leave the classroom, I would love to go into higher education and work in helping our pre-service teachers become the best educators, because in turn, our students will succeed.
So how far are you from that university?
So I live out from the university, but my school sits about, you know, we're about 8 miles from the university.
Okay.
Yeah. So we do get some of the resources, which are wonderful, from WVU. And that definitely sets us apart, I think, from most of the rural settings that I've taught in West Virginia. You know, having that access to the university is pretty, pretty amazing.
Sure. You know, obviously there's a teacher shortage in America right now.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the challenges, is that so many universities are located in larger urban centers. And so pre-service teachers don't normally ever see what life is like in rural schools or in rural communities. So I think that's a model we should.
We're so lucky here in West Virginia. I mean, you're a hop, skip, and a jump away from rural America in any aspect that you go to. We don't really have those big city centers like most states, but West Virginia University does a great job in having their pre-service teachers, you know, travel up to an hour and a half for their placement, which I know is probably bothersome for the student at the time, but it's so great to get that multiple experience in different settings. I think it's not a one size fits all approach to education. And so the more experiences we can give our pre-service teachers, the better off they'll be in the long run.
Well, and it changes that whole echo chamber idea, right? You're making them get experience in a different situation. That's valuable.
And
I'm
chasing
a rabbit hole.
I think it's important, Ty. One of the things that helps with retention is having some comfort in the locale that you're teaching in. And if you don't have rural experience, you've not lived in a rural place, the understanding of rurality is not something that you can read about. You have to experience it. So it's very important that our pre-service teachers do have some access to rural communities while they're learning how to do their teaching craft. Very important for retention.
Yes. Get that goosebumps. I have been saying and preaching that as long as I can. That goosebumps, what you just said. Thank you. Can you write it down for me and let me pass that out? That's exactly what I've been saying. You know, I am blessed enough. I came from a rural area. I have that background knowledge. I very well versed in the barriers that come with living in a rural setting. And I believe that makes me the teacher that I am. But if you don't have those things, you really have to immerse yourself in that. And how do you do that when you're starting your education career? It's best to do that when you're being guided by that cooperating teacher who can help you on that journey. So yes, yes, yes to what you just said.
Well, that leads me to my next question, which is about the rural advantage. Ty and I have talked with a lot of different educators around, what is that rural advantage mean? So what does it mean to you to be a rural teacher and have those unique opportunities like we're talking about?
You know, I grew up in the most rural aspects that you could possibly imagine here in West Virginia. You know, I am a child of poverty. I am a Head Start kid. You know, I'm the first person in my generation to attend college. So I understand rural America. I think rural advantage just means community. It's truly defined for me as it takes a village. Growing up in one of the most rural parts of West Virginia, I just always felt such a sense of community and safety. And throughout my education, I was cared for by teachers who had a stake in my upbringing. You know, they personally knew my parents, they knew my grandparents, mm-hmm. my aunts and my uncles. We relied heavily on each other for those big moments and the small ones. And now living in a rural area, you know, my middle child was diagnosed with a very rare encephalopathy when she was 9. And we had these astronomical out-of-pocket expenses for chemotherapy and dialysis. And it was that community that rallied around us. They did a spaghetti dinner and a 5K run, and they delivered meals to our family and gave rides to our kids. And I think when we think about the advantages of rural communities, we think about the safety net of structure that can exist for our kids. Rural communities give kids the access to personal connections that really should in turn help you grow emotionally, socially, culturally, mentally, and in turn professionally.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, so that's my goosebump moment. That's what I've told people about what living rurally means to me. All that connectedness inside your town.
You can't bottle that up. I mean, there's no way you can package that. If you don't have that upbringing or see it firsthand, you just don't know it until you experience it.
I'm going to ask you this question, even though I know it's not a fair question. I will protest this myself.
Okay.
I want you to tell me about like one of your proudest moments as a teacher, that aha moment that just really, you've already said this is the best profession. So you've clearly had positive experiences, right? What is that moment that just stands out to you as one of your proudest moments?
I have a few, so I'm gonna couple them down. Okay, the first one is definitely something that I met a student who forever changed my life. And we all have that student, right? We all have that student that changed everything for us. And this student was a product of rape and incest. And she was being raised by a caregiver and wasn't expected to do much academically. And I think, you know, that's when I learned in my education to rely on the village. And that was even the village that she had with her caregivers. And we really rallied around this kiddo. And she is forever ingrained in my heart because she left kindergarten reading on grade level. And we did it. You know, she is my success story. And this is the story that will forever stay in my heart, that you can't let what's on paper rule your teaching. You know, on paper, she should not have been able to read. She should not have been able to skip out of my class every day, you know, saying, "I love you, Mrs. Nichols." And she did. And, you know, I'm a better person because she entered my life. But I think the one that really sticks out to me, and Ty, you were there because at the National Teacher of the Year ceremony, we were all given a seat at the Rose Garden, right? We were all, you know, given that seat. And, you know, growing up in Appalachia, I never could have imagined being present in the Rose Garden. You know, as an Appalachian teacher, I instill in all of my kids, every single child, that there is a seat for them in any arena they choose. I preach that to my students, you know, daily. So I validate the struggle we face in Appalachia, but I quickly note to my kids that adversity is just extra fuel for the fire to their success. So I was taken aback by the enormity of my feelings as I looked at the chair with my name on it in the Rose Garden. I took that seat for every kid of poverty, every kid that carries the stigma of being from Appalachia, the kid who is unsure of their future. That was their seat, and I got to hold that space for them. And we were getting ready to walk out, and the New York Teacher of the Year looked at me, and I was just crying. And he said, "I see you." So this is a strong educator. And, you know, Billy, you know, from New York, he's a strong educator. He's had a completely different upbringing in terms of geography than I had. And I said, "Rural kids don't have seats like this." And all he had to say was, "I see you." And that really reignited my passion. You know, I've been doing this for 21 years. I stand on that soapbox and I tell my kids they can do it. But it was kind of in turn when I was given that seat that it's just totally changed who I am and who I am as an educator. I am more on fire now to help my rural kids realize that they have a seat at the table.
So I don't know whether this is what I'm supposed to say here, but I'm going to say it. You're right. And I love Billy.
Yes.
To be clear, like, I can't believe I'm going to do this in a rural podcast.
Yes.
Billy is the New York State teacher, and he hails from New York City. But the first time we met, we knew we had to. We both teach chemistry, so we've got those passions in common. And we sat and talked about what culturally responsive teaching looked like. And he talked about the minority needs in the city, in the suburb. The boroughs, right? That he teaches in, and the need to recognize people with these different backgrounds. And I agree with him, but I says, "Now tell me about your experience with rural schools." And I prompted him to reach out and try to learn more about the New York affiliate, rural affiliate. And he's been doing that. I mean, when Billy says he saw you because he's one of the biggest hearted individuals I've ever met.
Agree. Absolutely. And it was that connection of, you know, we had these different geographical paths and locations, but he knew where I was coming from. He had that same sense of, "I see you. I see that you know, you don't feel you need to be here, but you do. You earned that seat." But I felt like I was carrying it for every kid in Appalachia.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
There are some challenges facing rural education right now. And if you could quantify what the greatest challenge is that's facing either your school or your district or just rural education across the country.
I think we've touched on mental health. Absolutely. I think that's number one. But, you know, transportation. I mean, it sounds silly, but transportation is without a doubt our biggest issue. If a family doesn't have transportation and they miss the bus, I don't see the student that day. They can only come to school with the school bus. So any after school activity, doctor's appointments, you know, any mental health visits, pharmacy refills, therapies, you know, those are out of the question. And we don't live in these big city centers in which it's easy, you know, we don't Uber, we don't do any of those things. So our only mode of transportation for our students is the school bus. I am the coordinator for our summer programming. And when we added transportation to that programming, our rates soared. It wasn't the food that brought them in. It was literally getting them there. And so, you know, transportation is the biggest issue for that we face. I would also say access to broadband, you know, coming out of COVID. When we talk about disparity, you know, I was spending 14, 15 hour days during COVID. You know, our students here just don't have access to broadband. We don't, that's not something that we have. You know, internet access is not, you know, when I tell people that on the national stage, what do you mean you don't have internet? You know, we have plenty of students who don't have internet. It seems crazy, I guess, to some, but that's just what we're facing here. And when COVID was, you know, the only way we could meet was on a Google Meet or a Zoom, you know, half of my class was not available to do that. So I am driving and, you know, doing read alouds from driveways and, you know, doing anything that I could just to lay eyes on my babies because we couldn't see them. So
do you have solutions for any of those problems that you're talking about?
Yeah, I think when we talk about transportation, I think we just need to really be mindful of any after school activities or, you know, making those, you know, I know some of our rural towns are doing activity buses and really busing kids in. That's not something that's made its way here. But I think in the southern part of the state, those things are happening. You know, I think relying on the resources and talking to other rural educators in other states and just relying on that network of, hey, what do you guys do? You know, the power of this National Teacher of the Year, you know, cohort that we have, I have learned more about education and about problem solving strategies from my cohort members this year than I have in 21 years of education. I just wish educators had more of a time to do things like this. I think our greatest asset is each other and just relying and listening. Hey, what do you guys do over there in Arizona? Help us out.
Yep. Good point.
I mean, in terms of what we do, it's like our school offers what you said. We've got the extra activity busing and stuff like that, but it doesn't work when we don't have drivers. Our district can have all the buses. Like we have all the buses. Our hardware is not an equipment, not an issue. Yeah. Sorry. But when you like, it's our schools are struggling for people all over the board. We're struggling for qualified teachers. We're struggling for health, for mental health care, for psychologists. But I mean, we're struggling for everyone. Support staff up. It's lacking.
Yes. You know, I think raising a magic wand in terms of mental health. I mean, every school needs to have a qualified psychologist, a qualified nurse, a qualified counselor, a qualified outreach facilitator, and a qualified social worker. If we were to find those people and have those resources, we could fill that bottom tier of what our students need to feel safe, loved, and appreciated. And then we can get academics into play. But we got to have the people. I'm with you, Ty. We got to have the people.
Yeah, I know, but there was something else. I'm trying to remember. There was something else you said I wanted to go back to. I've got to say, like, having met you, I knew what an amazing person you are. But when you say I was driving to all of my students' houses to do reading in the driveway, like, okay, we know why Amber Nichols is the West Virginia teacher of the year.
Listen, I will not stop. There will be nothing that will keep me from my children, even a global pandemic. I will feed them. I will clothe them. I will make sure they're safe. And I will read them a story no matter what, no matter what.
You're amazing. What would you tell future educators who may be looking to teach in a rural setting? I mean, I know we've got to get more qualified teachers in the schools in general, but let's face it. I think rural schools are facing a stiffer shortage. And so what would you do to try and recruit more teachers into our rural schools, our rural communities?
Well, first, you know, we talked about my upbringing and, you know, child of poverty, Head Start kid, first of my generation to attend college. You know, I have that background of a rural student, and that makes me a strong rural educator. I think we really need to be looking at programs like Grow Your Own, these programs that go into our schools and find the talent. You know, I wish someone would have done that for me in high school and really sought me out and given me the opportunity to become an educator, because I think strong rural students make strong rural educators because we have that background knowledge. We know the barriers. So if that is your background, I say lean into that, but always look for the changes in rural America, right? The decline of rural America in some areas is real, and we must be mindful of that. I think that people that enter this field that don't have that background of rural education, you know, it's imperative that you gain an understanding of the problems and barriers that our students face. It's important to be mindful of the culture that rural settings embody. You have to have that to be an effective teacher in this setting. You know, in West Virginia, we talk about the three E's, and we look at, you know, equal and desirable goal for all of our students is education, employment, and enlistment. And I think we need to be sensitive to the barriers and the goals that we set. We have to be sensitive to both the barriers and the goals that our students set. I think that's really, really important. And the biggest thing I would say is just embed yourself in the community. Our greatest asset in rural education is the people. Make yourself a part of the community. We're here for the kids. We have each other. Make your community a positive place that kids can thrive. You know, I operate my classroom on, I am just the, every kid is one exposure point away from changing their life. You know, bringing in the resources, doing the projects, planning the trips, thinking outside the box. Our kids are one exposure point away from getting out of the cycle of poverty, getting out of the cycle of drug abuse, getting out of the cycle of alcoholism. We are just one exposure point away. We don't know what that exposure point's going to be. That's why we need to offer it all to them. But that's also, you know, a big issue for us in rural America, you know, getting those resources out to our students. But I really, truly believe that our kids are just one exposure point away from getting out of the cycle of poverty, drug abuse, and alcoholism.
That's well said. So, Amber, is there anything that we haven't covered or touched on that you'd like to make sure that you bring to the conversation?
Yes, I would love so much to have more conversations centering around our career and technical education programs. I really think that that is the heart of rural education. It doesn't get a lot of praise, a lot of talk about, but we need to be strengthening those programs. And in West Virginia, one of the ways that we're trying to combat the teacher shortage here, and I touched on it a little bit, is the Grow Your Own apprenticeship model. It provides aid, job training. It provides Grow Your Own students with wage earning field experiences. It prepares them for the teaching career while alleviating financial burdens. You know, when you're entering a field that doesn't always have the best pay, you know, we really need to alleviate these financial burdens for our students. In rural areas, we have to invest in these types of programs and we have to give our students the support. I think career and technical education is so underfunded and under talked about, but it's a wonderful opportunity for our students to really explore the passions to find their purpose in life. And I would like to see more conversation and more funding go out to our career and technical education programs for sure. I'm very, very passionate about that for our students.
And you know, one of the things that's really important about what you just talked about is the school is the hub of the community in a rural area.
Absolutely.
But what's even more important is that when you're able to launch those kinds of programs like you're talking about, it becomes a workforce development project for the community. So it's not only the students that benefit from that experience, but if they're able to be gainfully employed in the local community, then they stay. And then they're contributing members to the workforce within that community. So hugely important. I agree with you.
It's the cycle of what we're doing in our classrooms every day. We're trying to produce these productive adults in society, and we want them to stay where they are as productive members. And I agree, you know, strengthening that pipeline and getting our community center to be the strongest that it can be is the goal of what we're all doing, all the way from kindergarten to chemistry.
Ty, any closing thoughts?
No, I mean, gosh, this has been a lot of fun.
Yes! You know,
it's funny, Amber, because we've had some neat sessions together doing our work with CCSSO, but I hadn't heard some of these stories, and I'm just really glad we got to have you on here. Like,
thank you.
I'm blown away by some. Like, I'm never going to forget that. I'm using this wrong, but driving to all the haulers to park at the end of the driveway and your kids, that's a neat story.
Yes. And, you know, one of the coolest things that I did during COVID is I had a student teacher and she was not given a graduation ceremony. So I coordinated rides for all my kids to come and sit safely outside, and we played Pomp and Circumstance for her, and we gave her the best college graduation that she could get. And my students, I think it's really important for our students to see our college graduates, our high school graduates. It's very important, right? And so they'd seen Miss Marley all year working for this graduation that she never got to have. So I coordinated that with all of my families through COVID, lack of transportation, all of it. We got them all there, 20 out of 22, and we got to send her off. You know, it's really important. You just got to invest yourself in your classroom. You just got to invest yourself. And our kids deserve it, right?
Right.
They do. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you so much. This was awesome.
Thank you to Trainual for sponsoring the Rural Scoop. Trainual is the number one software for process documentation and employee manuals. It puts everything into one simple, searchable system that is easy to navigate, is clearly organized, and is simple to access. It's perfect for schools and even entire school systems. If you're using something like a binder or a Google Doc, Trainual offers a better way. You can design your training manual to function as a learning module and assign different material to groups like classified staff or certified teachers, departments, or even committees. Trainual can also help your continuation plans as well. For example, your chemistry teacher can log how they've organized the storage room, making it easier for the next person who takes that job. Trainual makes your employee handbook easy to delegate, easy to consume, and easy to search, and just, well, overall easier to run your school. Listeners of the Rural Scoop get 10% off their first 12 months by using offer code RURALSCOOP. When you sign up for your free trial, just enter RURALSCOOP, one word, as a promo code, and it'll automatically apply. Just go to trainual.com to get started. Thank you so much for listening to The Rural Scoop. Please be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, or even leave us a comment. And be sure to follow on Twitter at Dr. Sadorf. That's DR_SADORF so that you never miss a new release. You can also check out previous episodes of The Scoop wherever you get your podcasts. Production support for The Rural Scoop is provided by Chattanooga Podcast Studios. Find out more at ChattanoogaPodcastStudios.com. See you next time for more great discussions about rural education. Proud member of the Podnooga Network.